All right, with me now is Nathan Butler, the creator of the Star Wars Timeline Gold, host of the website StarWarsFanWorks.com. So welcome to the show, Nathan.
Hey, how's everybody doing?
Well, I don't know about everybody, but I'm doing just fine. Of course, they're listening to this show, and I'm not, so they must be hurting.
We must make them feel good. Make them feel good about themselves, Grasshopper.
Oh, is that what I'm supposed to be doing?
Is that rhetorical talking to the audience thing that they do on the radio? Now, I know all of you out there believe when, you know, how the hell do they know that? That sort of thing.
All right, so we're here talking for the 30th anniversary of Star Wars. Kind of a big deal in the realm of geekdom.
Mm-hmm.
So the first question is, when did you first encounter Star Wars, and what was it that made that indelible impression on you?
All right, well, for me, it's kind of hard to say for sure when I first encountered Star Wars. I was a wee little tyke at the time. I was born in 79, so I didn't get a chance to see the original in theaters back in 77, obviously, not even in the womb. But by the time Empire came out, my parents were into it, or at least my mom was into it. And she apparently, when I was a wee little baby, took me, and, you know, if I saw somebody taking a child this young to see a movie, I would be pissed because the child is going to scream most of the time. But apparently she took me as a baby or whatever to see The Empire Strikes Back. I obviously don't remember it. No memories back that far. But apparently I was getting into it even as a child before I knew what it was. By the time 83 came around with Return of the Jedi, I was asking to see it over and over again. She took me to see it several times in theaters, and I was buying all the toys and that sort of thing. So really my first exposure, I guess, I have some vague memories of seeing Return of the Jedi, but I think what it was the toys, really. It was the toys and the cultural stuff where I was always playing with it, and then seeing the movies was kind of like an extra treat for me. And eventually when we had it on VHS, back on the old VCR, that had a remote control that was like attached to the VCR with a wire because that whole infrared technology hadn't quite made it yet, that was sort of how I got into it. And as I recall, for a while there I was watching Empire and Jedi without A New Hope with it, because I seem to recall the tape that we had just those two on it. We had to go find the other one, hunt the other one down on VHS at one point. So it was like my trilogy for a long time was Empire, Jedi, and From Star Wars to Jedi, The Making of a Saga from HBO, I guess it was.
Yeah.
At least for a while. But it's an odd kind of exposure. It was not an exposure that was necessarily based out of the films to start with so much as the merchandising, as the space balls.
Merchandising, yeah. That was
Spaceballs the toilet paper. No.
And that was a direct kind of homage to George Lucas. And
yeah, something like that. That's what happened with The Phantom Menace.
Yeah.
Star Wars the toilet paper.
Exactly. Star Wars.
Not quite, but, you know, some would say.
Jar Jar the necktie, which I happen to own. So which character were you drawn to, first of all?
I guess it kind of depends. I mean, now I guess I have a bit more of an affinity for Han Solo, having, you know, seen more of the kind of tragic stuff the character goes through at different points in the overall expanded universe, knowing more of his background, and just having recently finished watching and reading, believe it or not, Gone with the Wind, Margaret Mitchell's classic, I can see how in a lot of ways Han Solo, and even a lot of his dialogue in The Empire Strikes Back, and especially the novelization of The Empire Strikes Back, were based around almost the character of Rhett Butler.
Right.
From Gone with the Wind, a very, very similar, you know, you could use a good kiss, you need to be kissed by someone who knows how, all that kind of parallel
right.
stuff. But nowadays, I guess I see the draw there. Of course, as a kid, you know, the initial draw is going to be towards the most heroic character, and my initial draw, of course, was towards Luke. I think, hopefully I did not grow up to be as whiny as Luke was in many cases. I'm going to go to Tosche Station to pick up some power converters. Anyway. I think probably more than anything else, though, the draw was just the heroism of it. The rising up against adversity, et cetera, even though I wouldn't have put it in those terms as a kid. And really, that's been very influential on me in general.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that probably most of my views, and most of the time, despite my persona on the air or on the internet that makes me out to be somewhat of a sarcastic jackass,
no.
I'm generally considered, at least by those who know me and work with me or have, you know, been gracious enough to date me and not want to throw something at my head, generally to be a pretty good guy most of the time. And I think it's not so much because, you know, I actively try to be most of the time, so much as when I was growing up, unlike a lot of other people in my generation, and certainly in today's generation, Star Wars provided almost a backbone of chivalry and a backbone of heroic archetypes rather than anti-hero archetypes.
Right.
Or for God's sake, hip-hop archetypes today. That gave me sort of a sense of what a person should be. I mean, it all kind of boils down to that whole Kingdom of Heaven line about what man is a man who does not make the world better.
Right.
I kind of grew up with that, and especially growing up in a home where my dad a lot of times was at work or gone. We didn't really have much of a relationship until after my parents were divorced and we started visitation with them much later. Absent a father figure that I was able to identify with all the time, and absent any older brothers, Luke sort of became that focus for me. So a lot of my ideas about heroism and about what it means to be a man taking care of others and that sort of thing, I guess in a way comes from Luke's Jedi journey. So the draw definitely for me back then was Luke, whereas now I can certainly appreciate more characters than just, obviously just the Luke character.
Right.
But, you know, back then, very myopic, very one character focus, I would say.
Mm-hmm. And certainly that was that way for me. In fact, I was in first grade when I saw Return of the Jedi, and on the playground, I was Luke Skywalker. The slide was the Sarlacc pit. The Jungle Gym was the Millennium Falcon, but I piloted the Millennium Falcon because I was the dominant personality on the playground. So would you say that's probably the greatest benefit for your life that Star Wars has given?
As far as my overall life, yeah. Definitely just giving me sort of that sense of direction. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean that in sort of a, you know, oh, well, the Star Wars is my life,
right,
or anything like that. Because as much as it may seem like it with all the crap that I do online, it's actually, you know, it's a big hobby for me, but it doesn't really define a whole lot of me.
Mm-hmm.
In a more recent standpoint, though, it has done a couple of other things for me, I would say. One, Star Wars' impact from an interpersonal standpoint. I've met a lot of people through this community that I would never have met before, especially getting into the fan audio stuff that I would never have met before, whether it's authors that I've interviewed or just friends that I've made, people that also do other shows. Also, the first time I was at Con Carolinas back in 2004, I was there just because of my fan audio ties, really. Rich Siegfried convinced me to go.
Right.
And that's where I met my ex-fiance. And granted, she's an ex-fiance now, but we're still really, really good friends and everything. That just was not a situation that was meant to play itself out,
right,
so to speak. But, I got a taste of what... basically a different life than I had led before, helping raise a child essentially as my own, her son for a while, living with somebody that I was with at the time. I mean, there's a lot of leaps and bounds of, like, you know, I'd already been on my own. At the same time I was starting into fan audio was when I moved away to start my teaching career in Atlanta, 6 hours away from home.
Right.
So I was already kind of in new beginnings anyway. But it sort of opened a lot of doors in that sense. And the same thing applies to my writing. I write a lot of, you know, stuff, and I've written a lot of just oddball little things over the years and done the fan audio dramas and all that kind of stuff, but it really took the validation of getting a chance to write for Star Wars Tales and having someone really acknowledge, someone professionally acknowledge my writing, my fandom efforts, that sort of has given me the confidence, I guess, to write new original stuff and feel like people actually will want to see it. That's where I got the confidence to do Echoes, the Podio book I put out a while ago, and any of the projects I'm working on right now. So Star Wars led me into a community, and I guess the community, in a sense, has led me into other things. It's kind of had a side effect,
right,
you might say.
So we've talked about the benefit that Star Wars has had for you. How has it invaded your life?
Has it invaded my life?
How's it gotten in the way?
Obviously, when you are young, science fiction in general, Star Wars and anything else, I'm not sure it is as much now. For a long time, of course, was a stigma, especially in those dead years where there wasn't much of Star Wars being produced and you were still considered a Star Wars geek, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
It's always a stigma when you're like a little kid, but I think it's the same thing as anything else. Intelligence is a liability when you're a kid to other kids. You know, oh, he's the smart one, he's the brainy one, he aced the test, what a dork, you know? Whereas now you're like, he aced the test, he's going to be my boss one day. You know, eventually you get to the point where you get into, like, college and such, and intelligence and creativity and imagination are much more respected and admired than otherwise.
Geek's revenge.
So in a sense, you know, Yeah, basically. So that sort of thing kind of changes things as you're growing up, certainly. I'm not sure invading is the right term, though, in a lot of ways. Because I reached a point where I just kind of stopped caring what people thought of me to the degree that I would bend myself to fit what they wanted to see.
Uh-huh.
Nowadays, if I will meet somebody, and I just made a really good new friend just in the last little, you know, like week or two, who actually reminds me a lot of my best friend back home, so it's really cool to have somebody down here to hang out with the same way. And I'll tell you, you know, there were no, I'm hiding my Star Wars projects, my Star Wars obsession from this new person or any other new person.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, this is who I am. Accept it or not.
Yeah.
And if anything, it's kind of provided a barrier between the fake people who don't really want to get to know a person and just want to get to know, you know, what they want the person to be as opposed to otherwise. So I guess that's more of a benefit. It's just, I don't know. I don't think invasion is the right term. If anything, invasion-wise, it has invaded my pocketbook because it is one of the things that I spend a lot of money on. I don't spend on the toys and that sort of thing. I don't know how Arnie and Marjorie Carvalho of Star Wars Action News do it.
Right.
But the comics and the books I buy, it's the reason I eventually bought an Xbox for Knights of the Old Republic. It'll be the reason why I buy an Xbox 360 or PS3 for Force Unleashed whenever the heck it finally comes out.
Mm-hmm.
And it is also something, it's somewhat time-consuming, you know, to read all the stuff and produce all the stuff and do the radio shows and that sort of thing.
Right.
But that, I'm the type of person who would be doing something like that anyway, whether it was Star Wars or otherwise. I have this creative need and a need to be doing something rather than being sedentary.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. I don't know if there is a level in which it is invasive. The only exception I could think of is that some of my projects and whatnot have gotten negative attention when people disagree with me and fired back somewhat irrationally often.
Right.
But that's kind of just, you know, it's par for the course. I mean, if you're going to be out there speaking your mind and not be pulling punches with certain things, and you're going to be pushing, I don't want to say pushing the envelope, but trying to get people to think for themselves, sometimes you're going to step on toes and people are going to bitch about it.
Right.
And yeah, there's been a couple of few anti-Nathan groups that appeared on the web, one of which had its own website. there's an anti-Nathan rant article that you can find at a particular former Chrono Radio guest's website. And I've gotten a death threat or two, but, you know, if you can't use the phone book to find a pizza place, I doubt you can track me down across state lines, so I don't care. You know, it's... invasive is not a term I would use for Star Wars. Pervasive, yes. Mm-hmm. Invasive, no.
Well, you mentioned, we talked about this last time we tried this interview thing, and this now seems a good time to bring it up. You talked about death threats and anti-Nathan Butler, and so I'm going to ask you the question the same way I did last time, since you know so much about pissing off Star Wars fans. What did TheForce.net do to piss everybody off?
Wow, see? He just throws me in there. He says, yeah, I'm going to ask you some nice questions, and all the while I'm backing up.
That's
further
right.
And further down the plank so that he can knock me into the Sarlacc.
Right. Argue!
The vagina of doom.
There be sharks in them waters.
There be sharks there. Wow. All of a sudden I feel the urge to grab a sword and start running around like Keith Richards. Or Jack Sparrow, same thing. Well, let's see. What did TheForce.net do that pissed so many people off? How to put this in a delicate way, because I'm trying to be more not politically correct, but more reasoned.
Diplomatic.
In my approaches these days. More diplomatic.
Yeah.
Not that it matters. My news bites that bear my name are pretty much banned from TFN fan films still, as far as I know, because I dared to call them on some of their early bullcrap,
oh,
so
dear.
Whatever. Yeah, it's a whole long saga. You can follow it on Chrono Radio. I don't know which episodes. I think it was like episode 10 or something. It's been a long time.
Yeah.
Basically... TFN right now, the reason why it gets bad blood sometimes from some quarters, and it's not as big a deal now, I guess, because Star Wars fan sites are sort of on the wane a little bit, is that it is not a fan site per se anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You can't call it a fan site anymore. It is, in a sense, first of all, it's an LLC. It is a corporation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, limited fiscal liability stuff. It is a business from that perspective.
And they have
a lot
of inside sources.
The official... yeah. They sell the official autographed pictures through official pics and promote the hell out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Rebel Scum has now essentially become a primary focus of any collecting articles you will see in Star Wars Insider.
Yep.
Or at least, I don't know, now that they've changed over to Titan Publishing. I'm not sure, but it was before. And of course, there's that whole big fiasco about how somehow Dustin Roberts became the fan club president with this whole weird getting hyperspace member voting thing when he certainly did not have the highest number of votes. And there were certainly discussions about how things are going to be handled when he becomes president before the votes were ever tallied.
Wow.
At least as some of the many, many discussions that came out afterwards. Of course, you can't read any of those discussions that were held over on the Rebel Scum message boards, because very soon after they came around, people were essentially told, agree with it or screw off, and the threads were deleted over at those forums. It just happens that there are other forums that aren't under the same banner. Suffice to say, a lot of controversy about the fan club president thing, but really, who gives a crap? It's not a position of any real authority. It's a couple of perks, and frankly, the way that TFN and sometimes Lucasfilm have kissed each other's butts in the past, they're going to get this preferential treatment anyway.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't matter. With the exception of the difference of reputation, Gate World, for instance, for Stargate, has sort of a same type of thing going. The only difference is, of course, that Gate World seems to have a particularly good reputation because they haven't had any shady past stuff.
Right.
The past stuff is what really has gave them sort of the black eye that they're still trying to get over with some people. But at this point, it's kind of like, you know, we are out there, we are big, you know, doesn't matter what you think, which is kind of the case. I mean, most people don't care.
Right.
It's not like they're running around like Super Shadow reporting false news and stupid crap like that.
Yeah.
But at one point in time, early on in the game, rather than acting as a news portal of, hey, such and such site just reported this cool news, if you want to hear about it, here's a link to it, which is the way you're supposed to do it.
Mm-hmm.
It was either such and such have just posted this information. Here it all is, verbatim. Oh, and by the way, here's a link, but of course there's no need for you to go because we just reported it all verbatim to you.
Mm-hmm.
Or, worse yet, we're essentially plagiarizing news articles from other sites. Now, a lot of this stuff, a lot of the more specific stuff I brought up, I guess it was episode 10, I think, of Chrono Radio. And later had a conversation with Josh Griffin, who at the time, or had been, I guess, I don't know if it was, he was a former former head, or one of the former heads of TFN at the time, or still one of the heads of TFN at the time, I actually can't remember off the top of my head, who basically on the phone confirmed all this stuff that I had said, every single bit of it. And yet, no retraction for the way TFN treated Chrono Radio and all that crap afterwards, the whole, you are making baseless accusations and spouting falsehoods as if they are fact, blah, 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 therefore we ban you.
Yeah.
From TFN Fan Films News Bites or whatever.
Right.
At least at the time. But there were some seedy aspects, you can catch it in that episode, but the point being, it's in the past.
Mm-hmm.
The issues were in the past, and most of the people who are there now are not the same people as in the past.
Yeah.
What did it do to piss people off? That was it. Especially at a time when fan sites were very competitive because no one knew who was going to kind of come out on top early on.
Right.
And it really sucked to be kind of one of the lesser-known sites, if there was a lesser-known site, to have your news sniped and such. But that's been a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of good people working over there, just as there have been otherwise. You know, Michael Potts, Chris McElroy, Chris Hannell, Kurt Luther, even though we've had disagreements, he's, you know, still, you know, he was one of my buddies for a very long time. Jeff Yankee, you know, he was, you know, kind of instrumental in that whole not, I will not take it back type of thing, but he's done great things for the fan film community. A lot of passionate, good people over there, just like on many other sites.
Mm-hmm.
It's just kind of one of those things that now, since there had been bad blood in the past, you almost have this sense that there's kind of a wariness to begin, like, going into it.
Right.
And now that we see it becoming much more like a business than it is like a traditional fan site, that wariness carries over in different ways. But now it's almost like it's a non-issue. I mean, I kind of got to a point, it's the same thing as anything else, like with people who gripe about my show or send me like, you know, like threats or send me stuff like, you know, oh, we're going to boycott this or we're going to boycott that because of what you said and stuff like that. I mean... It's fandom, dude.
Yeah.
I reached a point where, like I said about the whole, I don't really care what people think of me as long as they know the real me and I'm not having to put up a front about it. Same thing here. Dude, it's fandom. Just chill. If you're taking it that seriously to the point where you're going to lose sleep over it at night, you're doing it wrong. Find something else to go knit.
Mm-hmm.
Something. You know, it just, you got to relax about it. And it took me way too long for myself to learn to do that.
Right.
You know, so if there's anything I could say to those who are still worried about what did TFN do, what about this, what about that, relax. Even Super Shadow, the guy's out of his mind. My buddy George Lucas says, I'm going to make a sequel trilogy after all this is said and done. And they revealed the title, Revenge of the Sith, because one of my website forum members guessed it before they were going to announce it, and they couldn't just keep it under wraps. Oh, shut the hell up. But under, if you walk in knowing that he's out of his mind,
yeah.
If you walk in knowing it's bull, it could be very entertaining.
Right.
But seriously, it's fandom. Relax.
Right. And let's... I'm gonna be clear here. It's not like you're one of those guys that just goes and finds other people's news stories and reports them and stuff. You kind of were there at the advent of this whole internet fandom culture, and even some people involved in the expanded universe kind of took you somewhat as an authority at the beginning because you started the Star Wars timeline. So why don't you tell... Why don't you go ahead and tell everybody how you started that project and how that whole thing relates to everything.
Okay, just to clarify real quick, the Timeline Gold itself, because of how referenced it is as far as like how many tidbits, just like Time Tales, was often being referenced by official authors. It wasn't like an official source that
right.
you use, but just kind of double check sometimes mm-hmm. to use it. As far as like information goes, that's part of why it got the little thank you type notation in the new Essential Guide to Characters. But I wouldn't say I was there sort of the beginning of online fan, or at least I didn't feel like I was.
Mm-hmm.
Online fan audio, yeah. Few small projects then, and then I kind of picked it up and ran with it for Star Wars Fanworks, which kind of started bringing a genre that was already starting to exist together.
Right.
But the timeline, I didn't realize I was doing anything particularly unique at the time, except for the fact I couldn't find anything that worked for me.
Mm-hmm.
Time Tales, tell you the truth, at the time, probably if I knew that Time Tales existed, or if it existed in its current form, I probably wouldn't have bothered because a reference source would have been out there.
Right.
But the Star Wars Timeline Project and Time Tales actually started around the same time back in 1997, and there just wasn't anything else really out there to keep track of everything.
Mm-hmm.
So I started my own at the same time they were starting their own. The start of it basically was that at one point, I was an AOL member. God, AOL dial-up member,
wow.
for that matter. On the old Keyword Star Wars, which used to send you to Digital City Philadelphia's Star Wars site, which
yeah.
is now defunct, I guess,
yeah.
And a message board called Discuss the Prequels. While on there, I met a lot of people that I'm still friends with now, still members of the online community, like Devin Reed of Clear Concrete Productions, Amy Farrell, who's done a lot of fan audio work, people like that, Kat Murdo, or Murdo, I always pronounce it wrong. She only corrected me, like, years later. Murdo, like McMurdo. But in that community, at the same time that I was reading all these novels and getting into it and trying to keep track of that and the short stories and everything for myself, I found out that other people kind of needed a resource like that as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I had been keeping track of this on a little quick, I think it's like a 3-page Microsoft Works document for myself, just to keep track of it. I mean, there wasn't a lot of stuff that was out at the time. I wasn't really following upcoming releases except for just a few, that sort of thing. And people started saying, well, you know, share the resource because we want to be able to know how this stuff works too, and we can't find a concise listing anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So I essentially took that, reworked it into a 4-page Microsoft Write document, or WordPad document, I guess. I guess it was Write to begin with. And eventually started posting that on this message board, and then eventually wound up running a really teeny-weeny little Star Wars club, like just a handful of people, which eventually sort of just kind of became a mailing list for people to get copies of the timeline.
Yeah.
And it really just kind of grew from there. It started as a list of titles, eventually grew to include fan fiction, which is now gone, like a separate section for that, apocryphal stuff, little discussions, eventually summaries and events. So now it's grown to just freaking huge. You know, I look at it now and I wonder how it ever got that big, but I guess if you add just a tiny bit every now and then, it does start to add up.
Right.
But it really came out of my own necessity, and then I figured if I'm doing this that helps me, maybe it'll help somebody else, and I put it out there. I think in a lot of ways, it goes back, and this is before I decided to be a teacher. I think it goes into sort of that same thing that drives me in teaching, which is this idea of knowledge is out there to educate and to enlighten and to make sure that everybody's on a level playing field intellectually so you can have really in-depth, real discussions.
Right.
And Star Wars chronology at the time was a big thing, and how does everything go together?
Oh, yeah.
And I think that was sort of a an impetus was, if I can figure it out and I can share that, then we can discuss it.
Right.
But I want everybody to come into it with something other than a sense of ignorance. And in that community, it helped.
Well, and I think...
You'll hear more... when you get a chance to hear the final episode of Chrono Radio, you'll actually hear about some of the bad stuff that I did in that community. So believe me, it was not all perfume and roses. I was a jackass. Even more so than you would have ever heard on fan audio stuff back in those days. I was a... Somebody needed to slap me, and nobody ever did, which is probably, you know, how I got to where I am today.
So, you're not saying that you always approach the thing with professionalism in the utmost?
Well, no, I don't even know what that means. I approached the project professionally in a very, you know, well-mannered sort of way. It was more so my actions on the message boards and just kind of being an elitist jackass. I'm one of the people who hates the fact of seeing things like the fan film community, which I'm not really a big part of anymore at all.
Right.
But the fan film community for a long time was very stratified, sort of elitist. There was sort of the different social levels within it that sort of developed when the community got so big that it started to collapse under its own weight a little bit.
We do video. We're better.
Exactly. Well, and part of why I don't like that elitism and why it made me cringe so much to see it and I became such an outspoken opponent of it is because I kind of was part of making that happen on those old message boards. I know what it's like to be the ass pulling the strings, and I take full blame, full accountability for how bad the situation got on that message board, because there were no moderators. The moderators had flown the coop a long time ago, which just made matters all the worse. You'll hear about it in that final Chrono Radio, but suffice to say, if there's anybody out there that I annoyed back then, I humbly apologize. And if you happen to be out there listening, Mr. What was the username? DHorn123, we should sit down and have a drink sometime, because boy, did I treat you like... I mean, we were... Vader to my Luke, or vice versa. Interesting memories from those days. Suffice to say, big apologies out to anybody that I offended, even though I'm sure that by now they're like, who's he? Jack the Ripper, boys and girls. That was a screen name.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Anyway.
So, we're talking about...
Appropriate, isn't it?
Yeah. We're talking about Star Wars projects and official sources. Those two things kind of merged together in your life when you were published in Star Wars Tales. Why don't you tell us about that?
All right. Well, basically, the general gist, and again, if you want a lot of information, Star Wars, I think it's called The Making of a Tale. It's a Chrono Radio special edition I put out that has all kinds of detail. But the short version, which I guess is the way that they put the wedding in Spaceballs, the short version is that...
Do you? Yes. Do you? Yes. Kiss her.
Good, you're married. Kiss her. The short version is that at the time, let's see, I put out an episode of Chrono Radio called My Show Runneth Over, which was not meant to be the big episode for February of, I guess it was 2003. It was meant to be a supplemental episode because I had a lot of stuff to talk about in the regular episode, and it literally ran over. It was going to be a huge episode, so I split it in half. The real episode was supposed to focus on female-centered topics. It was an episode called Too Much Girly Stuff, and hardly anybody remembers that one. But the same time I released that, I released this one that's like an overflow episode just on different topics. And one of the topics was how Dark Horse kept, in a sense, screwing the pooch when it came to Star Wars publishing at the time. They couldn't meet their release dates that they kept targeting. They were having copy editing problems inside the comics themselves, stuff like that. And there was editorial issues in public because one of the editors, the guy who was ahead of the line then and still ahead of the line now, was making some pretty fan-bashing or fan-riling comments on some message boards. So I kind of went on this huge rant. It's often referred to as the Dark Horse rant. If you listen to Chrono Radio, you know what I'm talking about.
No, that's a classic.
It's kind of one of those, wow, Nathan just kind of went off. And there's nothing scripted about it, which is the saddest thing in the world, I guess. Either sad or brilliant, one of the two. And it eventually gets attention on the Dark Horse message board because Dave Land, one of the other editors, hears it and brings it into that community, and just things just kind of explode in this huge, you know, debate, and like, you know, I'm such a horrible person from ever bringing this stuff up, and blah, blah, blah. And it goes on for like a couple of months, this massive quasi-controversy. Anyway, around that same time, or a little while later, it just so happened that that's when they were thinking about canceling Star Wars Tales. And instead of canceling it, they took it away from Dave Land, or Dave Land gave it up, whichever. And it goes into the hands of Jeremy Barlow, and he's given the chance to sort of retool the title and go from having a whole bunch of random stories in any individual issue, some of which were canonical, some of which were not, and the canonical ones only sort of in retrospect because it wasn't really supposed to be canonical, blah, 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 this big continuity mess. He is going to retool it so there are some stories in continuity, some that are not, but they're clearly marked, and there are longer stories in each issue. It's like a 64-page comic that they would now have, like, three stories in instead of, like, six or however many. So he comes on, and he's looking for new talents to sort of introduce in this, and he has a unique opportunity to offer it to people who haven't got a lot of experience because they are shorter stories. They're not full-blown, full issues of an ongoing series. You can play around with it just a little bit.
Right, and they're easy to edit.
Right. And this is Jeremy Barlow. He's the other of the three editors, and he was the one who sort of stepped in and moderated and explained how things really were trying to be fixed. This sort of ended the whole controversy a while back.
Right.
And he sends me an email that's basically... what would you think about writing a story for Star Wars Tales? Would that hurt your position as a member of the loyal opposition? Just something a guy says, let me know, or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, at first I didn't even really jump at the chance. I was like, holy crap, this is a great offer, but would that mean that I couldn't do fan projects anymore? So I was kind of wary about that, checked with him about that. But then he said, no, you know, it's cool, it's like a freelance thing, you're all good. So I said, okay, sure, and hopped in on it. And it was sort of a validation, really. He says later that the main reasons why he offered that to me, and he was offering it to me without the others really kind of knowing much about it, because there was a lot of controversy still surrounding, you know, that crap from before.
Right.
But he said that basically the Star Wars timeline sort of showed that I had a grasp on continuity, so he didn't have to play around with keeping the reins on me too much on that. And hearing opinions from people about the audio dramas, plus, and that sort of thing showed that I could kind of tell a story. But in particular, the passion of hearing the stuff on Chrono Radio showed that I did have a caring for quality for this stuff. So he figured, you know, might as well give me a shot. It's only a little 14-page thing anyway. So I had the chance to submit a pitch, and we went through a couple of different pitches, actually, until finally coming up with a story that worked, took that, then turned it into a script, and it's going back and forth between me and Jeremy, and also Jonathan Rinsler over at Lucasfilm, who had to approve it, eventually gets locked down and say, yes, this is the final script, we're good to go. He turns it over to the artist, who turns out to be James Reyes, whose work on the Transformers Armada comic books I had really enjoyed, especially the cover art that he did. So I was all excited to see James Reyes involved in it. And then he kind of kept me in the loop on the process, got me copies of different things so I could see what it looked like throughout the whole thing. And, you know, in the end, there it appears, and equals and opposites in Star Wars Tales 21 or Star Wars Tales Volume 6. My one big, I guess, relatively speaking, blip in Star Wars officialdom. I mean, the only other Star Wars officialdom thing I've blipped into, aside from just articles about that,
mm-hmm.
Or credits about that, would be, you know, I had a What's the Story entry go through a while back for the speeder that Anakin uses to fly and go kill Mace. It was an interesting experience, but one that I was very, I guess, sort of blessed to receive. I did not expect it. I was not looking for it. I know the whole thing about you have to be a previously published author. You have to be invited to the party. You can't just submit something.
Right. You got to come out to the ranch. And
yeah. To have been asked the to do it at all surprised the heck out of me.
Yeah.
To be able to see the final project just kind of, you know, it still is kind of surreal to me looking at it.
There's such a great cover on that issue, too.
Oh, yeah, the Vader cover is terrific that they got for that issue. And the photo cover is pretty good, too, but the Vader cover just, you know, very nice. And actually, if you look at some of the early solicitations for it, the Imperial symbol behind Vader was actually screwed up to begin with. It was actually a Republic symbol by accident. And they had to change the number of spokes to make it an Imperial symbol because something got, you know, messed up somewhere along the way. I just have a little tidbit to toss in there. But yeah, it was kind of a blessing in a sense. It was something that really surprised me. I don't ever expect to necessarily be able to do it again unless I got an anthology or something coming. But it was definitely a validation of the fandom efforts, and it just made me sort of realize, I guess, that it was time to mature a little bit when it came to the fan productions I was doing, to mm-hmm. really put more effort into making them more professional-seeming, that sort of thing, less goofy at times. It was a surprise. It was a good surprise after all those years. That was 2004. I'd been online since about 1997, been doing the Star Wars Timeline Project since 97, doing fan audio since 2002. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, by that point, you know, it had been a long while. It was just, it was a nice thing to see that validated, in a sense.
Right. Now, you kind of ran over something really fast. Did I hear you correctly? You said you designed or described the speeder that Anakin flew in Episode 3?
Yeah, well, they do that. For StarWars.com, their hyperspace service has this contest called What's the Story? And essentially, they give you elements out of the films that have not been really fleshed out and let you write backstories for them and submit them, and whoever wins, their backstory becomes the official backstory of that.
Right.
Me and another poster, Dark Moose, I believe is his name, both submitted backstories for that speeder, the DC-0052 Intergalactic Speeder, I believe is the number of it. And those two backgrounds were combined to form the official background of that speeder. And it's the speeder that you see Anakin gets on it and uses it to go from the Jedi Temple to the Palpatine's, where he winds up eventually killing Mace and whatnot.
Right.
Obi-Wan also uses it when he goes to visit Padme later on, you know, to find out where Anakin has gone.
Mm-hmm.
But all that stuff, in that speeder, the background of it is attributed to he and I. And if you can find it on the StarWars.com databank. But that wasn't like an official thing. It wasn't like I was hired to do it. That was just sort of one of those things where I happened to enter the contest and happened to be the one who won it. And boy, I've submitted a bunch of those, and that's the only one that's gotten through. So I don't think there was any preferential treatment there.
It got into a film. I mean, it's official.
you say yes and no. It's kind of like, I mean, it's all official continuity stuff. But the speeder was already in the film. It was just we need a background for this, so why not? And for a while there, I was hoping to submit so much stuff that eventually I might have something in every film that had at least a tiny tidbit of my tie-in, but that's not going to happen. The Watch the Story stuff has really slowed down. But it's cool. I mean, I got that sort of officialdom, and then the otherwise. And I've gotten quoted in that sort of thing and had a chance to put some stuff into some unofficial stuff, like Will Brooker's Using the Force and the Star Wars Super Collector's Wish Book. But those are different. Those aren't Lucasfilm giving you a nod or Dark Horse or someone like that giving you a nod. That's more just a nod toward the fandom efforts, just as fandom efforts,
right,
not as like officialdom based on fandom.
Not to
efforts.
Nathan Butler, per se.
Yeah, not so much due to. They're more based on what I've done in fandom rather than what I might be able to bring to the table, so to speak.
Yeah. Obviously, there's all kinds of fan dissent regarding the prequels, ranging from George Lucas just was sloppy because he was trying to get them done, to get them put behind him. And some even say he betrayed the legacy of the original films and ruined something out of their childhood. So, I want to get you on record, throw you in the sharks again. What did the prequels do wrong, and what did they do right?
What did they do wrong, and what did they do right? Well, first of all, let me correct you on something, if I may bring in a sort of a cultural recent reference here. I don't think it was that Lucas betrayed anything consciously. I think it was just he spent way too much time around doing the crack and being around those, what was the phrase, nappy-haired hoes or whatever it was that Imus used? Rick McCallum, the nappy-headed, no. we just got to poke at it. And we're the talk radio people. It's the internet talk radio people. We got to poke fun at stuff like that. What do they do
That's
right? What
Nathan
do they do wrong?
At StarWarsFanWorks.com.
Great. Thank you very much. Pull me off of CBS. Oh, wait. I'm not there. I wish I was. I could make some money that way.
Who knows? You might be next.
Yeah, you could be next. Yeah, that's a great thing to put it. You could be next in this day and age. You could be next to be sued. You'd be the next one to be Anna Nicole's baby's father for something.
Hey!
Wow, talk about, you know, the road that everyone's taken.
wow.
Anyway, what did the prequels do right and what did the prequels do wrong? Yeah. Okay. What they did right and what they did wrong. What they did right was they brought it back in general. They brought Star Wars back, period. After so long outside of the theaters, they really brought it back in a big way.
Mm-hmm.
They gave us a story that was much more complex than we would have realized. Phantom Menace aside, the portrayal of Anakin and his fall is not what we expected. We expected it to be something like, oh, he's already kind of being tempted to the dark side. Oh, Anakin finds out that Obi-Wan and Padme have been having a thing behind his back. He flips. They fight. He goes into the lava. He comes out as Darth Vader with the suit, and now he's evil.
Right.
It was sort of the way that it had been presented within fandom.
Mm-hmm.
We now find he was a character who felt like he was justified in his actions. He became Vader before he ever got the suit, and it was more about trying to do right and always somehow screwing it up, whereas he always felt as if what he was doing was for a greater good.
And it all started when his mommy died.
Yeah. When his mommy died in his arms, the rest of the world was screwed. Or the rest of the galaxy, actually, I guess.
Right.
It's funny, there's a whole, I don't remember what the words were, we did a whole Christmas Carol parody back in one of the Chrono Radios ages ago, and one of them was the idea of the death of, or I think, yeah, it was Ian Bowie was on the show, and it was a parody of O Christmas Tree, and it's something like, oh miss me, why did you die so horribly? And the next line is, you've just doomed the galaxy. Yeah. Which is basically what happened, you know, she dies and he goes apeshit.
Right.
That troubled little child, who hadn't seen his mom in years anyway. Yeah, way to go, Jedi Order.
Yeah.
Suffice to say, they gave us a more complex Anakin than we would have expected, and they gave us a much more expansive universe than we had seen before. We now see Star Wars in a much more expansive visual light with these great vistas and these planets and just, you know, the sheer breadth and scope of it.
Mm-hmm.
In that sense, it did it very well, and Revenge of the Sith, barring, you know, a lot, some plot jumps and such that you get out of the novels and stuff, but not out of the films, were at least able to carry out the film, the trilogy, decently. Though it's not nearly the classic the originals are just yet, of course.
Right.
As for what it did wrong, timing in a lot of ways, really. And timing in the sense of, when was it released? Well, it was released so late in the game, so long after the originals, that the anticipation was so high, nobody could ever have matched it. Doesn't matter who it was.
Right.
It could have been films identical to the originals in every respect, and they would not have built up, or not have lived up to the hype of new Star Wars films. You just can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
So in that sense, the timing's off. In another sense, I think The Phantom Menace... That was my cat sneezing, by the way. He really does sneeze and shoot projectile snot. I swear to God.
Yummy.
Yeah, yummy. Yeah, very yummy. Yeah, you're not woken up by it in the middle of the night.
Oh.
Not the snot, but the sneezing. Come on now. You also have the fact that The Phantom Menace probably took place a little too early in Anakin's life, I think. Yeah, we got the whole psychology of the kid who's taken away from home and all that kind of stuff. But there's such a huge gap in that 10 years, and it's such a kiddie story the way that it's told in The Phantom Menace in a lot of ways that really, you know, it could have stood to be later, or maybe part of the film in the past, part of the film a few years later, like some novels do, and some films do, like Gone with the Wind, and the novel of Gone with the Wind in the book do, as far as like jumping a few years in the ahead in story.
Mm-hmm.
The Phantom Menace just feels disjointed compared to the rest of the films, compared to all the films, let alone just the prequels, because of that huge gap that's in there. It also introduced some contradictions, that I think if they were made closer to the time of the originals would have been less obvious and would have been ones that Lucas would not have made because he wouldn't have spent, you know, years necessarily thinking about certain things like midichlorians, like the whole Jedi ghost explanation that we don't really get, though it was promised.
Right.
Which, of course, goes into a further time issue of the Revenge of the Sith could have stood to be a much longer film with less intellectual stuff cut out to make way for the eye candy and the fighting.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you name it. It's all a matter of timing, though. It was a trilogy that, in some ways, opened many new doors for Star Wars and should be lauded specifically for that. I don't think we would have seen something as dark as Legacy of the Force without it, or the potential of stuff like Legacy, the comic series, without it, because it really sort of reinvigorated the creative fires. On the other hand, it's not on par with, in most people's eyes, and will probably never be on par with the classic trilogy as far as film history goes and as far as cultural impact goes. And in that sense, one could say it may have dragged Star Wars down a little bit because now it's not all the rosy, shiny, happy classic trilogy. It's all six movies you have to take into account when looking at the Star Wars film saga, for better or worse.
Right. And I think a lot of people obviously have that, well, I wouldn't have done it that way, and blah, 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 you know, they couldn't have done it any better, you know. And I frankly, I enjoy all three of them. In fact, I think probably episode one is probably the one I like to watch probably the most, just because I think the score was the best of the three. And I think Qui-Gon Jinn has now become my favorite Jedi. And Darth Maul, obviously, is one of the greatest bad guys that they ever created. And it's a shame they had to kill him off and get worse with every movie. So, let's talk a little bit more about the fan audio stuff.
Okay.
And get back to you specifically. You've got some really great, you know, audio dramas on there, and I think a lot of the people that love the patio books and the podcast novels would, you know, really be in for a treat if they head over there. And one in particular was Always in Motion.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of had this ingenious idea, I thought. I don't know if it was your idea, but it was a pick your path story where you'd listen to the first episode and say, you know, if you want the character to do this, you know, go to number 5 or et cetera. I thought it was really well done, really entertaining. Do you plan on doing any more of those kind, that pick your path type?
Do I plan on doing any more? It's possible. Let me just give a brief kind of background there. It was not my ingenious idea, and unless the ingenious idea was to swipe it for a fan production. I read Choose Your Own Adventure books and Pick Your Path books a lot as a kid, loved the concept. Eventually, when I was working for a comic book store during college, either late high school or college, back in Evansville, Indiana, Comic Quest, I happened across TSR, the company that originally did Dungeons & Dragons and stuff, I think,
right. Put
out a series of essentially Choose Your Own Adventure CDs called Terror Tracks, where you were essentially like an X-Files type of thing, hunting down vampires or werewolves and stuff like that. In fact, the little ba-kink that I used for the quote sound on Chrono Radio, and that was used to help denote when you're about to make decisions on Always in Motion, is actually from that. It's directly lifted.
Thief.
Thank God it's a fan production, so I can't be sued.
Hey, what are the royalties on Chink, anyway?
On Ka-Chink? I honestly don't know. I'm sure they're, you know, it's the same thing as like royalties on Bling Bling. I'm not sure you can do that anymore. Otherwise, any rappers would have to be paying money to the person that come up with the first cash register. I think my plan right now is I want to get some more original fiction out of the way first. Like Unity, which is the sequel to Echoes, Engagement, the little short story to go with Echoes, that sort of stuff. I want to get some of that out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
If I were to return to Star Wars fan audio dramas, which I may at some point, you know, I can't rule it out. It's not immediately in the cards, but it could happen.
Right.
I think my next project would be something like Always in Motion, but I would probably do it bigger. Because last time I was so constrained by, I want to make sure it all fit on a CD. I want to make sure it all fits on a CD. Now, with MP3 players and stuff like that being all the rage, I don't see the need to necessarily have it all fit on a CD, so I could do something bigger. Mm-hmm. If I were to, it would be some type of story. I don't know what era it would be set in, but I've already kind of been thinking about the ideas. It would be a much bigger story, more paths to take, and at some point early on, you would have to not just choose actions, but choose which of several characters you became or you followed. So essentially it'd be several different characters following several different paths that somewhat interweave, and you not only choose your path for the character, but which character, which gives you more options to choose from. Much more complex.
Vastly.
Problem is, writing those, complete pain in the ass. I mean, absolute pain in the ass.
Yeah.
It's very difficult to keep track of without a big, you know, massive poster board of nothing but like arrows pointing to different things.
And then all the recordings you get and...
Yeah, and the recordings, are rough.
Getting different people involved and sending you files.
Yeah. Well, that's a good thing. I mean, with Always in Motion, there wasn't a whole lot of people involved in that one. It was just kind of a handful. I think it was less than 10. On the other hand, Second Strike was all linear. There wasn't any jumping around, and we had like 45-some-odd people involved in that from a voice talent standpoint. But yeah, I mean, I may do something like that in the future. I think the next Always in Motion you'll likely see is probably not going to come from me. It would probably come from Joe Harrison. Because he did Conquest of the Empire, and now he's working on an audio drama called High Stakes, and he's working on an original thing called Age of Swords. But he has talked about wanting to do an episode of Always in Motion, because I'm totally open, as long as somebody has me doing the narration voice so it matches the rest of the series, and follows the format that I laid out starting with the first episode, Ambush on Onkara.
Mm-hmm.
I'm totally cool with somebody else coming in and doing more episodes of Always in Motion, just like we did with Anthology. Using it as like a feature to show other people's works under one banner so it gets more attention. I'm totally cool with that.
Right.
It hasn't come up very often recently. Mm-hmm. But Joe Harrison might put out one, hopefully. Me in particular, if I do, it'll be bigger. But whether I will or not really depends. It's one of the few projects that's stuck in my mind as something I'd like to do maybe someday. But there's no way to tell. I mean, I always think that I'm going to have more time to work on stuff over summer break than I actually do.
Mm-hmm.
And this summer break, I really want to get a lot of headway done on Unity or some original fiction. And it's, you know, it's looking now like, you know, that's where my creativity is going to be more directed over summer.
Right. Okay. The next series that I really liked was the anthology series. And in particular was Addiction, which was, you know, about a pilot that was addicted to pain medication and ended up causing a big tragedy. Where did the idea for that series come from?
The idea for anthology really sort of finds its roots in fan films. Really the same thing with Second Strike. Second Strike, the first one that I did and the first one that was out there, I guess technically, at least on the internet, Second Strike was born out of a fan film project that was a fan film script that was meant to be made after a project I was working on with some other folks that never got made, and I retooled it for audio at the suggestion of a guy named Chris Newsom, who played Lannis Louder in Second Strike. Well, same thing happened with anthologies, just that most people don't realize it. The first two anthology episodes, Doubt's Cast and Dreamscape, were written in conjunction with a guy named Pete Dixon, the original idea being to put them out as a series called Force Tales, a series of short fan films that would have been more morality tales, more like fables, really, force fables, he may have called it at one point. Eventually, those weren't going to be made as fan films. It looked like everything was falling apart from that, since I had been given previous permission, you know, if nothing is done with these and you want to do something with them, maybe someday, you know, go ahead. Some miscommunication back and forth a little bit about it, but eventually, you know, it was all cleared, everything was cool, and I went ahead and produced them as the audio dramas. And since I already had those going and I was wrapping up things on Second Strike and everything, I thought, well, this sounds kind of cool, why not make some more? Because here, Doubt's Cast Dreams deals sort of with the concept of, is peacekeeping best done through actively promoting avoidance of conflict or through conflict itself to stop those who are causing conflict? Dreamscape, sort of the idea of, way before the New Jedi Order, by the way, the idea of light side, dark side, or is it all your intentions?
Right.
Then you get into The Mob, about how much responsibility does a person have within the mob mentality for their own actions. Addiction is drug abuse, a victimless crime. Responsibility was all about this idea of how much culpability can someone who unwittingly helps a terrorist have in a terrorist attack.
Mm-hmm. And of course,
since then it's sort of diverted off a little bit because I've let other people do episodes. Sean Corey did one, Chris Walker, and so on and so on. Eventually, Runaway was supposed to be one, but didn't wind up being one.
Mm-hmm.
It came from that Force Fables kind of an idea, because when I already had two morality tales ready to go, I went ahead and thought, well, why not do morality tales for some of the other ones? And I just liked the idea of doing more audio dramas, but I didn't want to do full-blown, huge ones, and I wanted to sort of experiment with the storytelling styles a little bit, because, again, at the time, there wasn't much out there. Technically, the first audio drama out there for the Star Wars fan audio genre, at least on the internet, was Second Strike. Well, technically, the second one out there was the first episode of Anthology, Doubt's Cast.
Mm-hmm.
It took Resurrection coming out next after that, I think it was right after that one, to be the first one to come out from a different creative team. So, I mean, it was kind of like I was playing in a vacuum, really. And I just wanted to play around with it because, you know, Second Strike had an audience, let's play with it while we've got it, because I figured that, in a sense, the fan audio drama craze would not happen. I figured people would just fade away and just be like one thing that I put out there, and okay, he's just a bastard child of the fan film genre who doesn't know how to do video. And then it turns out that things kind of grew from there, because there were other projects being worked on at the same time as Second Strike that I hadn't known about very much, like Rise of Nobility and Smuggler's Run. So things kind of grew, but it's all that, you know, it's let's rescue this story that was written as a fan film because it was too good to pass up. And the same thing, there is a story out there right now that I wrote in conjunction with Devin Reed years ago, a parody of a movie that is one of my favorites and one of his favorites that ties into Anakin, Vader, Padme, all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to see that script made someday. And at one point, I think Kurt Luther was going to be making it, but so far I've heard nothing more about it. I would love to see it. It hurts in some ways to see a story get completed from a writing standpoint, but never find an audience from a production standpoint. So.
Right.
You want an impetus? That's what it was. It was simply, I want people to hear my story! and making it happen.
Yeah. So, this will be the last topic for our discussion.
Okay.
Having been involved in podcasting for about a year and a half is really about how long I've really been into it. It seems that the fan audio side of things is kind of archaic. You know, people look at it like, well, you have to manually download your your episodes. Mm-hmm. And, is there kind of a disconnect? Like, are the podcasters kind of, do they have that elitist mentality over the fan audio people, or is there really even a difference?
I don't think there's much of an elitism, but there is definitely a disconnect. But it kind of depends on when you came into things.
Mm-hmm.
For those of us who are in this generation, it's kind of slowly fading out of fan audio, or at least fading out of genre-specific, franchise-specific, like Star Wars-specific stuff,
right,
and into more original stuff. I think a lot of us who originally released stuff through either live broadcast or through just straight downloadable MP3s without a podcast feed, kind of, we were sort of at the cutting edge for a while, and then podcasting sort of appeared and came out of a different direction and sort of left everything else behind, in a sense. There's sort of a disconnect because it didn't come from the same community. On the other hand, you do see podcasters now who saw podcasting and got interested in the idea of podcasting, then saw fan audio and saw podcasting as, or radio show type production or audio drama production as applied to their favorite franchise, and decided to combine the two and create podcasts based out of the franchise,
uh-huh,
like Star Wars Action News, like, you know, any number of the more recent Star Wars entries into the field.
Jedi Council.
So I guess if you are someone who was already, who is into podcasting and came into it from that point of view, you're going to have a slightly different perspective than someone who started in fan audio and then moved into podcasting. But I think as the years go on, it's not going to make as much of a difference.
Right.
I think eventually it will be recognized that fan audio, both in Star Wars, Star Trek, and some other genres, really was the beginning of a new type of online audio production, full-blown online audio production by fans.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, it's going to be maybe acknowledged as a ground floor type step, but it's not really going to matter. Because give us a few years of podcasting, assuming that podcasting still continues, as it seems like it's going to, and it'll all have blended together by then anyway. I doubt that within a few years we're going to see very many straight download projects being put out there in lieu of using a podcast feed. Mm-hmm. One of the recent audio dramas, I can't remember which it was off the top of my head, I almost want to say it was the Star Wars audio drama series Charybdis, but I'm not sure. Or Charybdis, I think is how you pronounce it. One of them just started up a podcast feed to release their episodes of their audio drama, which hadn't really happened before.
Right.
We'd seen Star Wars podcast radio shows put out through podcast feeds. We'd seen Star Wars parodies at times put out through them, like Tatooine TV. Now audio dramas are kind of getting into the mix as well. It's all going to blend together. And the further we get away from this first and second generation of Star Wars fan audio producers who released as direct download and remember those days fondly, the further away we get from that, the more it's going to blend together until eventually someone's going to say, wait a second, they used to do it as direct download? Really? Is that the same thing as like walking to school in 50 feet of snow? You know, it's not going to matter. And really it shouldn't, because it's all fandom. But you just got to remember, you know, when you choose your medium, I think I addressed this a while back on either Fan Audio Made Easy or Fan Audio News Source, one of the two. When you choose your medium and your release method, you are in a sense choosing your download numbers.
Mm-hmm.
If you do a podcast feed and you get it out on a lot of the big podcast sites, you're going to get a heck of a lot more download numbers than you're going to get from doing direct download just off your own personal website. You have to decide what makes you happy and what you can live with, what makes you content in
right.
that sense. And if direct download works for you and smaller download numbers, and, you know, just reaching the hardcore people who really come and want to listen to it without necessarily automatically downloading it, the ones who want to show an effort, then go for it.
Right.
But I see direct download fading and podcasting becoming more the rule than the exception, even within fan audio. But
right. By
then, we won't really probably be even thought of as fan audio, except for a few of us. We'll probably just all be thought of as, oh, there's the podcasters.
Yeah, probably lumped all together. Well, and you mentioned something real briefly. You mentioned, you know, fan audio kind of dying off a little bit, you know, kind of not really being as active as it was. It kind of seems like the Star Wars canon is kind of filling up. You know, all the little gaps are getting filled up with more and more stuff. And tying in with the theme of the show, things are looking up. How are things looking up for the Star Wars franchise and also Star Wars fandom. Is there anything left to be accomplished?
Well, for fandom, I guess it's just honing skills that's already there. But most of the fandom genres seem to be pretty well getting filled into. Fan audio, fan films, fan art, fan fiction, certainly. Fan websites are sort of on the wane. Fans can look forward to other things. I think fans are going to finally see a chance to branch out again. Mm-hmm. After so long focused on Star Wars itself, you know, it's time to start branching out creatively if you're going to be creating anything else. It gives you a launching off point.
Right.
So in a sense, things are looking up in the sense that, you know, you have new things to aspire to. From a Star Wars franchise standpoint, though, yeah, there's no more films, but we have the Clone Wars cartoon series to be looking forward to, the new one.
Yay.
We have the Star Wars television series to look forward to, assuming neither of those screw things up like the Clone Wars micro-series continuity did, which is just a cluster screw all over itself. Notice how I avoided the F word on you there. Cluster screw by itself. But we also, of course, novel-wise, we got some really weird ones coming that sound like Luke Skywalker in the Shadows of Mendor, which is based off like a little throwaway paragraph in the New Essential Chronology. But we also have Legacy of the Force, which is one of the best Star Wars novel series in years that is still going. We have Star Wars comic series like Knights of the Old Republic and Legacy that are some of the best Star Wars comics in years. Now, Granted, Rebellion is in that really packed-in era between episodes 4 and 6, or 4 and 5, but still, you know, that's really good stories if you can manage to shoehorn it all in there. And you've got big things coming like the 30th anniversary, it's the celebration in Europe, Celebration 4, which would be big fan gatherings. It'll probably be a while to the next big one, I would imagine, unless they decide to do one for just the next year and just keep doing them year by year.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, we also have that big Force Unleashed multimedia project that, if they pull it off, might be able to be more successful than the film campaigns and more successful than Shadows of the Empire, because they will have learned their lesson of how to make it too small, too big, too well marketed, too little marketed, and so on,
right,
to give us really a true game, novel, comic experience.
Mm-hmm.
That just technologically should catch the eyes of many people because of the gamers and the storytelling groups.
Right.
So in a sense, I mean, Star Wars is branching out to new areas of exploration, new areas of storytelling. For the fans of the classic Star Wars, just the films, especially just the classic trilogy, there's not a lot of stuff coming out for those folks. But if you're into this, the Star Wars saga itself, and you like to see new ideas and new directions,
mm-hmm,
you know, then yeah, things are, so to speak, looking up.
Terrific. Well, let me give the list. Let me know if I miss anything. You can find your fan audio and the site for all the hosting for fan audio for other people, you know, this big community of all kinds of contributors and creative juices at StarWarsFanWorks.com, including
yes,
the Star Wars timeline. Let's see what else. You can find Nathan Butler's Echoes at patiobooks.com and also Star Wars Fanworks, which is kind of the central hub for everything Nathan Butler. And you can donate a little bit, throw a little money Nathan's way through the Patio Books site. And I don't know what else is out there because Star Wars Fanworks has so much of it on there.
Yeah, Fanworks pretty much takes in the vast, vast, vast majority. The Star Wars Timeline Gold has a little, like, also available section if you want to check out stuff like that and see if there's anything else around. Like, I do reviews for some comic books on the Babylon 5 Spoiler Junkies page and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say the other thing is just, you know, if you want to see stuff in print, then the Star Wars Super Collector's Wish Book 4th Edition is coming out soon. That'll have a small article on Star Wars book and comic collecting that I wrote for that book, but the book is by Jeffrey Todd Carlton. So that'll be out there. And if you want to see that story, of course, from Star Wars Tales, then the individual issue is Star Wars Tales number 21, but it may be a little tougher to find because it's been a while. But Star Wars Tales Volume 6, the last of the Tales trade paperbacks, also has the story in it. It's the one with the bluish stormtrooper cover, which is actually pretty cool looking. But yeah, awesome. If you want the fandom stuff, yeah, StarWarsFanWorks.com, just shoot over there. The timeline's linked through there. Echoes is linked through there. Eventually Unity and whatever else will be linked through there. And you can find my stuff and the rest of the Star Wars fan audio genre. If you're just looking for my stuff, you know, pull up the people directory, pull me up by my name, and just look through the resume type thing, the profile. The site's got an IMDb style listing of all the people in fan audio, Star Wars fan audio at least, who have produced projects and what they've been in. So if you want to find anybody, me or anybody else, you know, just check out the people section, browse around. You'll find a lot of people that you may not even realize participated in fan audio.
Very cool. And then coming up in June, finally, we have Con Carolinas. It's 1st through the 3rd, is that correct?
Yeah, 1st through the 3rd, it is at the Marriott Executive Park in Charlotte, North Carolina. I will be there. I'm assuming Rich Siegfried will be there. Who knows who else will be there from fan audio. For Star Wars fans, you're going to have Elaine Cunningham, Barbara Hambley, and Peter Schweighofer all there, which should be pretty cool.
Right.
Fun little thing. I mean, it's a kind of a family con. It's not nearly as raucous as some of the bigger cons and that sort of thing, but just kind of a fun weekend. But yeah, June 1st through 3rd, I will definitely be there, and it is a small enough con that you really get a chance to hang out with and get to know a lot of the people who are there. So if you ever want to just kind of hang out, that is the time.
Cool.
You know, I'll be around all weekend, barring, you know, illness, injury, deaths in the family, all of which have taken me out of there before a little bit early. But hopefully this year will be the year where I don't get sick and nobody dies. It'll work.
That would be swell.
That would be very swell.
And if I can name drop, Earl Newton from StrangerThings.tv will be at Con Carolinas.
Yes, he will be there. He will be there too. And Earl and Rich, both from Requiem of the Outcast, of course, as well. And if you haven't seen Stranger Things, definitely check it out. Earl's doing a really good job with that.
Yeah,
great stuff. Sacred Cow.
He's showing up everywhere.
Yep, they're all over the place.
All right. Well, thank you so much for taking this time again
to do
an interview on my show. And I guess that's it. Say goodnight, Nathan.
Good night, everybody.